Good morning on this beautiful Sunday morning. We are back to our Sunday studies. As an association of thinkers who gather together under no bylaws or no officers, etc., the purpose being to better fit ourselves to help one another, because if we think about it, nothing we've ever learned, we've learned strictly by ourselves. We are always helping one another. And that's what the Lodge calls a theosophist, one who is working in the service of humanity. And that can be in any form that you feel appropriate. The main idea is universal brotherhood. We're exploring the idea that everything in the universe and universes is one, comes from the same source, and returns to such at the end of cycles. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. So you will find these truths in other religions, in other philosophies, but they may be hidden and it may take some work and study to decipher them, and that is part of our job as well. So as I said, we're back to our Sunday meetings. Doors open at 10:30. The meeting is from 11 to noon. And next week, we are working on self-development, practical application in self-development. So next week is an article by William Q. Judge called Meditation, Concentration, and Will. Interesting idea. Ideas. On Wednesday evenings, the doors open at 5:30. The reference library is open till 7:30, after which the class runs from 7:45 to 9 p.m. And we are currently working in the Bhagavad Gita. And as we said, no matter how many times we read it, we find something new and exciting because our perspective has changed or we have moved up in our studies. So there is also a book table in the middle of the building, open before and after all classes, and at 6:30 during library hours. So we don't ask for donations. We don't ask for your help in any way except that which you see fit. And that could be in work, in service, in time, or in money, because even a dollar given with the right heart motive makes a big difference. Everything goes directly to this lodge to keep the lights on and the temperature appropriate for the season. So we are starting the winter season with some words on daily life, published by H.P. Blavatsky, but written by a master of wisdom. So you'll see on your papers there are certain highlighted paragraphs. Those are the ones that will be summarized, after which we can take questions on any part of the letter. Thank you.
Can everybody hear me? So, as was said, this article is some words on daily life. And it starts off by proposing a realization that it's all well and good to understand the spiritual and psychic ideas that go along with nature and how this can, and we're looking at this can be one way to promote a spirit of unity and harmony as it pulls together all the differences of opinion, of religion, everything that's different. By following this divine philosophy, everything can come together. So therefore, the philosophy then puts upon those of us that are, as they put it, fellows of the society, to be very tolerant and give charity towards others' shortcomings, so that even though they don't believe what we believe, that doesn't mean that they're bad people. And that it's very important for us to help people try to understand the truths. And by understanding the truths, we're looking at an understanding of nature, moral and physical. And there's a very emphatic statement, the last of this paragraph, and this ethical standard must be unflinchingly applied to daily life. Well, basically what it's saying is that it is all well and good if we study, we discuss some of these high ideas, we listen, we go to lectures, that kind of thing. It is important to understand that, but at the same time, theosophy must be made practical. As was said within the opening comments about universal brotherhood, this is what we're getting to look at. So every theosophist should do his duty, that which he can and ought to do. And this was an eye-opener too. Sorry for the personal comments. That which he can and ought to do, and very soon the sum of human misery within and around the areas of every branch of your society will be found visibly diminished. Forget self in the working of others, in the working for others, and the task will become an easy and light one for you. So basically what it's saying is that this lodge right here is a beacon for the neighborhood around it. So those of you who would know yourselves in the light of theosophy may find yourselves being in this world but not of it. And so it is being said to look within your own soul, that the only praise or blame should come from within and from your higher self. It is called the higher consciousness. And it says, without delay, put your good intentions into practice. Just don't say, well, I'm going to do this, that you have to do it. And expecting, just like the Gita says, neither reward or acknowledgement for what you do. That reward and acknowledgement will come from inside, that peace which is inseparable from you. And in all of us, we have what is called here the Supreme Court, the prosecutor, defense, jury, and judge. That is our higher nature. And that is the one that will make the judgment, and there is no appeal once that judgment is made. And let therefore the masses, which can never know your true selves, condemn your outer selves according to their own false lights. So what they see in us doing, they may criticize it, but they don't see what that inner person is like. And conversely, if we see somebody who's being negative towards us, we don't know what's going on with them. So we're on the bottom of page 3 here. So there are two problems cited of that true theosophy and its mission may occur. The first one, a lot of it is kind of like a summary of the first paragraph, that we have to put these practices into our daily lives. And development of ethical ideas to support men in their search, that we need to help people do that. And then again, secondly, put them all into your daily life. So this is the work that we all have to look to do if we are going to be putting forth these ideas. And it is said that it's labor intensive, that it's strenuous and persevering, that it is definitely an exertion. But this is what will lead us to our progress. And again, it cites, leave no room for any selfish aspirations. It's just to do your duty. And it's kind of normal for people to compare themselves with other people, that, oh, I'm better than they are. Oh, you know, I wish I was like this person. But they're saying here, do not compare yourself to other people. It kind of holds you back from the work you have to do. And it's karma is mentioned here. They're saying, do not be too severe on merits or demerits of one person who is trying to get involved with these ideas and trying to understand them. That inner person of that new person that comes in is coming in with their own karma, and we know that karma is a two-way street. It's like, you know, they're coming to us for us, and we are coming to them for their help. So it's a two-way street. Even the simple presence among us of a new person can definitely help us to be more sympathetic and less judging, knowing that person doesn't know the philosophy very well at that point. So the last paragraph, and this is HPB talking, I think. The degree of success or failure are the landmarks the masters have to follow, as they will constitute the barriers placed with your own hands between yourselves and those whom you have asked to be your teachers. The nearer your approach to the goal contemplated, the shorter the distance between the student and the master.
Thank you. I want to repeat that last line. The nearer your approach to the goal contemplated, the shorter the distance between the student and the master. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with theosophy, the master would be a soul exactly like us, but much higher in development. In fact, the only difference is the degree of development. One who has taken his lower nature and gotten control of it, performed his duties, checked his motive, everything that was mentioned in the part, and has become perfected for this period of evolution. So that's what we call a master of wisdom, yes.
As we read through this and listen to the summary, strikes one that these words could be equally applicable to any human being in any part of their life, whether they call themselves a theosophist or not, whether they're working for theosophy or not. It's just universally helpful. So when one takes up the study of theosophy, does that place any unusual or a special obligation on that person other than before they took up the study?
Is there any special obligation when we take up theosophy as opposed to regularly working on these ideas on our own? We love to compare these ideas to schooling. We are terrific at math, and math is our basis, mathematics. Yet we want to be a physicist. If we have that as our goal and begin to turn in that direction in our studies, there will certainly be more difficult tests, more difficult ideas to digest. One is asking for, I hate to say tests, but one is asking for duty to become a parent. So in a sense, it does help spring up and become apparent to us that which we need to work on. And I'm sorry, we have lots of hands in the back there.
We were just thinking, we never thought of this whole idea of the prosecutor, the defense, the jury, the judge, being that higher, coming from our higher nature, and without any type of appeal. We were wondering, is our subconscious or consciousness or whatever you want to call it, that we sometimes hear within ourselves to do something or not to do something, does that have any connection with this part of our nature?
Yes, absolutely. That which knows right from wrong has learned it in past lifetimes. So if we have a choice in front of us and part of us immediately says, no, don't do that, there's a knowing. And that knowing came from prior experience. Now, depending on our motive, as it mentioned, and our desire, and next week we'll find out our will, we can choose to say, yes, I want that. It's going to feel good. I'm going to love it. I'm going to do it anyway. But that intuitive small voice is our guide, in a sense. And we have to check it, because it may not be that still small voice. It may still be our desire sort of in disguise. But we find that out through experience and working and trying to live up to these ideals. Yes.
On page 3.
It's always been a difficult question, because there are those whose nature invite them to turn within and begin to understand who they are and fit themselves for this work. And there are those who are very comfortable being out in the world and looking for opportunities to help. So again, not judging, as it says all through today's part. We must assume the person knows best for themselves. Now, I have a number of quotes. They're all from the Key to Theosophy because we're concentrating on H.P. Blavatsky today. Our philosophy teaches us that the object of doing our duties to all men and to ourselves the last is not the attainment of personal happiness but of the happiness of others, the fulfillment of right for the sake of right, not for what it may bring us. Happiness, or rather contentment, may indeed follow the performance of duty, but is not and must not be the motive for it. Yes?
I have a difficulty with the statement on page 4 towards the end. The nearer you approach the goal, contemplate it. I have no idea where my approach is in respect to my goal. There's no milepost, there are no accolades, there are no gauges telling me where I am, if I'm even in the right path towards the goal. So, how does one know? I mean, I feel sometimes like I'm a blind kitten, you know, working for a maze, that one is even on the right track.
Right. That's an excellent question because we all started with it at some point in this study. Where do I look? How do I know I'm doing the right thing? How do I not do harm? HPB expresses duty, which is what it is you're looking for. Duty is that which is due to humanity, to our fellow men, neighbors, family, and especially that which we owe to all those who are poorer and more helpless than we are ourselves. This is a debt which, if left unpaid during life, leaves us spiritually insolvent and morally bankrupt in our next incarnation. Theosophy is the quintessence of duty. So we always say duty is that which comes to us. And we can't discuss that without discussing karma, because everything we put forward in any lifetime has its return to us in a future lifetime. So your duty is a personal duty in a sense. No one else can tell you what you should be doing. But if opportunities arise and we, with practice, make ourselves aware of them and work on them, then we're heading in the right direction. Might be as simple as somebody's on the side of the road with a flat tire, and we pull over and say, "Can I call someone? Do you need some help?" Now, it's a little scarier in today's world, but we can also hold the door for someone, or at least begin to think of others before ourselves. So look for those opportunities where you're in the right place and time to do something, and do it with the highest altruistic motive you can. Follow up?
Yeah, if I could just follow up. So what you're saying is, it doesn't matter that I have no idea where I'm going. It doesn't matter whether I even know that I'll succeed or not. What matters is that my motivations are correct and pure, and you know, proper according to the law. Beyond that, everything else is technically irrelevant.
Well, beyond that, the next part of the duty is to check the results.
But the results are months or years away. Who knows?
Exactly. But if we are aware of something and we try our best with it, just make a mental note of the result and perhaps later in the day think about, gee, could I have done something different there? If it doesn't bother you at all, you did it correctly. But sometimes that little voice in the back of our mind says, "Oh, come on." And we have to pay attention to it. Way in the back.
Yeah, like any other engineering project that we might face in life, we can also set a particular goal that's finite, that is for this moment, or for this morning, or for this 24 hours. And setting a tone in the morning, maybe my goal is I want to be more aware of my emotional attachments in the moment through the day.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps that task that's self-defined, and there may be millions of other tasks that any one of us could design that's appropriate for the body, its conditions, its personality, and then we live through our vehicles, trying our best to hit that goal for the day, and maybe stopping periodically. Maybe it's to reflect at noontime or 3 in the afternoon, or again before we go to bed for the night. How did I do? What was the goal? Was I able to reside in the perceiver, in the higher? As I lived through the body and through the personality, was I able to sustain that? If not, when and where did I get off the path? And so chunking it that way, we may have a spiritual goal that's very practical and suits the personality that likes to be able to be linear in a certain way, to be able to test and verify.
So setting a goal is very important, and then checking periodically our results and motive and desire here and then there.
Regarding another previous comment regarding should we be checking ourselves all the time, how do I know? Mr. Judge makes an analogy between the gardener who plants a crop and is constantly digging up the plant to see what progress its roots are making. You don't get anywhere with that. So it's actually the opposite we should do. We shouldn't be constantly examining ourselves and asking ourselves, am I making this progress, or looking at our own progress? It's sort of the wrong focus. As was suggested by the interviewer, we should keep ourselves focused on the end of view. Our progress, if any, will be apparent to others in their time. And our progress, if any, will be obvious to us by the judge within,
mm-hmm.
who can see and
the only one
evaluate whether we're on the right path.
Right. Absolutely. And I love this quote that came to mind when you talked about pulling the flowers up. For every flower of love and charity he plants in his neighbor's garden, a loathsome weed will disappear from his own. And so this garden of the gods, humanity, shall blossom as a rose. Just beautiful. Yes, way in the back.
And it says here on the back page.
Mm-hmm.
It talks about not comparing yourself with others, because you can get caught up in what they're doing or not doing, and who's doing better than you. Somebody's not as far as I am. Because it's just when we're talking, they're talking about the criticism should come from the higher self.
Absolutely.
And one of the initial comments was about the conscience, and is that who we're listening to? And indeed, that's, you know, it's our higher nature that's going to tell us if something's right or wrong. And we just wanted to make a comment about the results of our actions and goals. It's like we can't be tied to them. We need to kind of have an idea of what our endpoint's going to be. It's important, though, like giving a gift to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing it because we see that it's something that has to be done. And we're hoping that this person's going to be happy. We will say, oh, yeah, look, this is perfect for John. But if John doesn't like it or re-gifts it to somebody else, so be it. It was our motive.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's actually on page 2, one of the parts we did not summarize today, talking about they make an idol of you so long as they imagine you a faithful mirror of themselves on the pedestal or altar which they have reared for you, and while you amuse or benefit them, and then when it's no longer to their taste, they move on. So there's an element of pride that is really dangerous when we are praised too much, or it talks about praise not really being appropriate. Everybody is working in the same direction as they are able. So praise is one thing. It has sometimes a bit of a falseness to it, which I think this is talking about. Rather to say, did you have some references from today? It was something interesting I'd like to pursue. Rather than, you had a wonderful class and you look great. And we need to identify what our goal is, as was said, and not let anything interrupt that. Your hand was up before.
Yeah, well, going back a couple to the comment about looking for milestones,
mm-hmm.
and positions along your path, and I think we might get too tied up in looking for positive milestones that are obvious measures along the way. But maybe what we should be looking at is the diminishment of the negative mileposts.
Absolutely.
They're a lot easier to see.
Absolutely, the mileposts. The final goal cannot be reached in any way but through life experiences. And the bulk of these consist in pain and suffering, as Buddha told us. It is only through the latter that we can learn. Joys and pleasures teach us nothing. They are evanescent, and it goes on from there. So if we are suffering, if we are attached, if we are putting forth motives and desires that are not in the right direction, and getting the suffering that results from that, that's how the coal, the piece of coal, becomes a diamond. It gets rubbed and scratched, and it suffers and eventually shines forth. And that's what we can expect. The difficulties are what give us the knowledge. Yes.
There's just one sentence here we think that's very helpful. It's on page 4. In the fields of theosophy, one is held to weed out a larger plot of ground than his strength and capacity will permit him. Sometimes we judge ourselves in a sense because we don't think we're good enough to get up on the platform, or good enough to understand something, or good enough or strong enough. That doesn't matter. What matters is with what we are good at, we apply it in the right direction. There's such a burden from us.
Yeah.
And actually, it helps us do more.
Absolutely. And I highlighted that and read it a couple of times. None is held to weed out a larger plot of ground than his strength and capacity will permit him. Nothing that comes to us is beyond our capability to handle. We may suffer, we may miss the goal for the time being, but nothing, if karma is law, then anything that returns to us was the result of something we put out. So anything that returns to us becomes our duty because our fingerprints are all over it. No one else can do that for us. Yes, in the back?
Sometimes, because we've been trained as Americans to quantify and to measure or look for a cause and effect that's very linear, we can stumble. In this, when there's words on daily life, isn't it more like the movement of the ocean or the rising and setting of the sun? There's a cyclic, circular kind of process to life. And a goal may not be a linear destination at all. It's the path. It's the process of moving with nature and adjusting to the grandeur. That's the goal.
Absolutely. And in that cycle, if we're awake, we may find a group or a number of people in our circle of living suffering from similar things, or on the other side getting some positive reinforcement in some way. That universal brotherhood becomes very evident very quickly. There's something going on here, and it means if we are close and can separate ourselves from the pain or the joy, we are in the position as duty to help one another. So sometimes that suffering is the best marker that we need to get through it and find someone else who needs us. Yes. Yes.
What does this sentence mean on page 4, towards the bottom of the paragraph? Even the simple presence amidst you of a well-intentioned and sympathizing individual may help you magnetically. How do they help us magnetically?
We're thinking of the quote by Mary Ann Williamson that the gist of it is, we think we are nothing, but in actuality, we are beautiful and talented and fabulous. And when we begin to understand that spirit within and act as such, we give others permission to do the same. So the magnetic attraction between, let's just say, everybody in this room, when we leave today, we're going to have the benefit of all the ideas that came together, use them individually and practically in our lives, but magnetically drawn to this room at this time, we are working with nature to accomplish our goals. Any other thoughts on that? No? Yeah.
Just the idea also that in any group, the strongest is helped by the weakest. And the weaker, well, for the time, are benefited by the whole. Everyone gains from the mutual effort. And that status of weak is only a relative one. One obviously can be very strong at one point and weak at another.
Absolutely. And that's really the third fundamental proposition, that those who are farther along that path, and we're told the path varies with the pilgrim, but we are still on the same path. I just lost my thought. Please remember the last comment. Yes.
We'd like to go back to that discussion regarding the near or the last sentence in your approach to the goal contemplated, sure, the distance between the student and master. And we know that philosophy puts out the idea that no matter how much you try, it doesn't matter how much you fail. It's just that you keep trying and you keep your motives good. And we know that we love by Mr. Judge, and I forget where it is, about he says that it's not, you know, all our trials and tribulations really aren't trials and tribulations, they're opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
So we get the idea that if we keep things in a positive light and we fall, it's we'll just get up again. We forget which scientist it was or which inventor. You know, he had something about 99 times he failed, and how did you keep doing that? So it's like he knew what he didn't have to do. So when we fail, we use that knowledge so that we don't do it.
This isn't the right way. Exactly. And that, again, is being very mindful of our behavior, of our thoughts, of our feelings, which is essential in this work. Yes.
I recently read that the statement that not all suffering is karmically caused. In other words, the concept that sometimes if one chooses to evolve, that may require suffering. But it's quite possible to exist without doing any harm and without doing any good, basically just an existence, in which case you don't incur karma and you don't create karma. But that would be just an existence. However, if you are to make the best katana sword in the world, right, the steel never sinned prior to its existence, yet you beat the crap out of it in order to make it the best sword in the world. Right? So there was no karmic duty to that sword prior to its existence. Yet it was beaten in order to evolve into what it was.
But that is the lower kingdoms. That's the mineral kingdom that we're talking about. So if we can stick with where we are, which is self-consciousness, you can't have a lifetime without creating karma. Every time you exhale, you affect all of the air around you. Every time you get in the car and go to the grocery store, I'm doing something good for my family, the exhaust is affecting the ozone. Every time you think an altruistic thought, I'm proud of my family, my children are flourishing, they feel that, although you don't see it as an active duty. But we can't have a life without karma being made from the moment the heart starts beating in the womb. And so you have to have the return. Now it says, if you were wrongly using your powers or ignoring your duty, you will come back with, it actually says morally bankrupt. I can get over that. You will come back, I can't find it, but basically you'll come back with the effect of that lifetime where you decided to sit it out, and you'll be that much further behind. So even if you believe you're not influencing the world and setting out karma, you are. Karma needs a being to make it and have its effect. Yes?
To go back to a previous question on what additional obligation might be imposed on us or implied by our study, the first sentence sort of indicates that before we come to theosophy, our idea of truth might be limited to what we perceive by our objects of sense, perception, or physical perceptions. But once we study this philosophy, we become aware that within, spiritually and psychically, we are interconnected with all. And it's that realization of understanding, that knowledge, which now makes us even more responsible to carry
absolutely
out. In our ignorance, we didn't know any better. Now that we know, we sort of can't turn back on that knowledge without being morally bankrupt.
Right. Yep. It says mutual toleration and charity for each other's shortcomings are necessary in helping to reveal the truth. You know, one of our objects is to spread, broadcast these teachings. And that could be a whisper in an ear that everything's going to be okay. You're strong. It doesn't have to be. Let me explain karma and reincarnation to you, because you may lose them. They may not be ready to hear it, but you find a way to pass these teachings on as they were passed on to us. Yes.
The topic is about daily life. So we have to understand that in this lesson, we're going to learn how to live our daily, and that the degree of success or failure are the landmarks. How can a failure be called success?
No effort is lost. So whether it's a failure at the moment or a success at the moment, first we're told we should take it equally. We shouldn't be cast down or lifted up. We should, however, realize there was a mistake made, so there must be a better way to do something. And again, from the key, let every man be a revelation unto himself. Let once man's immortal spirit take possession of the temple of his body, drive out the money changers and every unclean thing, and his own divine humanity will redeem him. For when he is thus at one with himself, he will know the builder of the temple. So by the time we get to the point where we are understanding we are spirit in essence, then we understand the purpose of the body and duty, and everything must be done on this plane, the physical plane, to have its effect in future life, this life and future life. Yes. Use your hand. Oh, yes.
Yeah. We think the key to all this is the last sentence on the first page in bold print. Forget self in working for others, and the task will become an easy and a light one for you. So it's it can be enjoyable, actually, if we can get. And self is in all caps.
Right.
So I guess we mean a self of... But then that almost seems contradictory, because
yes,
that's the self of all.
I wondered about
how
that.
How can we forget that?
From the key. I wondered about that too.
Okay.
I really did. The one self has to forget itself for the many selves. There's a mystery. Let me answer you in the words of a true Philalethean who has beautifully expressed it. What every man needs first is to find himself and then take an honest inventory of his subjective possessions and, bad or bankrupt as it may be, it is not beyond redemption if we set about it in earnest. So we took that to mean we are so enraptured in the physical self, and we know there is the lower nature, the higher nature, there is that which is above that, and then there is the all. And the one has to forget itself for the many selves. Take all of that out of your mind for the moment and just start the work. Take an honest inventory of your subjective possessions, which has to be done. The inventory is on the physical plane, but it is done by the inner man, because he is the observer, the thinker. if we go by what the physical man perceives, we are often wrong. Yes. Mm-hmm.
We think here also the author is describing the important difference between the path of liberation and the path of renunciation, because there are millions of spiritual devotees who sincerely believe that it is right for them to aspire to achieve union with their higher selves, whether they call it nirvana or heaven or self-enlightenment. But the point is that even in the spiritual sense, we are to forget that aspiration to the higher end. Direct our attention to those among us who need our help.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that is what the it sacrifices that high state in order to come back and help others that are less knowledgeable than themselves.
And that is why at the end it says, if you take a step in the direction on this path toward them, toward perfection, toward knowledge of spirit and self, they take a step towards you. There's a magnetic drawing between the two, and the only meter by which the master judges us is what we have achieved. Let's see what it says in here. That last bit there. The degree of success or failure are the landmarks the master has to follow, and they will constitute the barriers placed by your own hands between yourselves and those whom you have asked to be your teachers. So one of the things that we do in this study is ask to be, I don't want to say enlightened, but ask to become conscious of that which the master knows. So every time we have a conscious realization of spirit, of self, of brotherhood, that sort of rings a bell or lights a light where the master knows someone, some soul, is working in the right direction. That's what they need. They need companions to work on this plane because they exist on a higher plane, concomitant with their state. Yes.
We like too on the last page when it talks about magnetic fields, and then it talks about working in the field. And when we consider, and it talks about the sum of misery being reduced in the immediate area.
Mm-hmm.
So even though all is connected and all is one, wouldn't that mean that magnetism's a little closer when you're more in proximity to others? And so it's just, I never thought of like magnetic field and working in the field, but
right,
we think it's connected there.
Yes, the magnetic field or attraction or plane can be accomplished a number of ways. As was said, the closer we are, the stronger the tie might be. However, our thoughts and feelings and desires and will and imagination, all the powers of the mind, are also setting up strong magnetic affiliations. So you might be home and thinking about something you heard on the radio or saw on television where there was a catastrophe, and you simply send out good thoughts and help in your mind. You don't need to be there. You can be if you are able to, which is great. But if you're not, Vyasvi says, work from within outwards, and we can do that anywhere. So it's different ways. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Regarding the previous comment of renunciation and liberation, should mm-hmm. one first be liberated before one can renounce a? I see myself as being so far before I can. The only thing I can renunciate is bagels and donuts. I mean, I'm not at that point of renunciation. I need to liberate myself first so I can see what it is that I could possibly renunciate.
Renunciation and liberation. If you look at it this way, everything that we are attached to in this lifetime, bagels or bike riding or whatever it might be, those are physical examples, but whatever it might be, reading trashy books, anything that fills the mind that is not of a higher nature, we need to break those attachments before being free or liberated to see the higher. So renunciation simply means denouncing the attachment and deciding to do our best now free from this, which takes a long time, the habits we've built up. But we think renunciation has to come first. Liberation being, I can see clearly now, and now my work really begins. And that's where we become lit up in a way where the masters are aware of our work. Excuse us. Any other thoughts? Yes. Well, it was renunciation and liberation was the question. In a sense, yeah, you know, in a sense, there is a little of both in there because we have to free ourselves from those attachments. So in that sense, there's liberation, but we were under the impression from the Gita that renunciation came first. Any ideas?
Well, in the specific context of the point of liberation versus renunciation, it means that the disciple seeks a spiritual state which in itself will liberate them personally from the awareness of suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Ignorance. And in some traditions they call that nirvana. In the path of renunciation, disciple doesn't care. He's not concerned about their own suffering or spiritual problem. They renounce that for the benefit of those who suffer more or who are less knowledgeable themselves. They devote themselves to the helping of others rather than their own spiritual salvation.
Okay. Thank you. That's a better explanation. Yes.
With regard to that comment, would that mean that by karmic law, the person who renounces regardless automatically becomes liberated?
Would the person who renounces automatically become liberated? Well, it's a step on the path. Liberation in the sense of understanding who and what we are and what we're capable of is a long journey to get to. Now, it also says once you really begin to work on it, it's a number of just short lives before you have reached the pinnacle. I don't know. Any thoughts? It's time. Oh, it's time. Go ahead. No, it was a question. Okay. We'll have to leave that one for self-study. Let me see if we got all these out. Yeah. Just want to repeat this one. For every flower of love and charity one plants in his neighbor's garden, a loathsome weed will disappear from his own. And so this garden of the gods, humanity, shall blossom as a rose. Go and blossom.